All right, ready?
I have never been less ready for a movie I watched on and off this afternoon, this morning.
While you were working, I would imagine.
Because I had a major work thing to do. So I'm like sitting here going, play, half an hour, pause. Okay.
And that's how we do the 50th show. Welcome to Book Club for Movies, everybody. It's March 21st. I'm Ryan Miller. And he's back, Matt Amberg.
I am disappointed. I really thought you were going to have a...
You're right. I do movie quotes when I introduce you, don't I? And look at my boat go, Matt Amberg.
Boat goes! Look at me go on a boat.
I could have even just done a Master Commander thing. Man, I really am getting lazy. Yeah, that's what happens. You give us 2 weeks off.
You could have said Master and Commander.
Dang it. Okay, starting over. No, I'm not. This week on Book Club for Movies, where we talk about a movie that we've watched over the course of the last week, hour, minute.
You know, any time prior to us talking about it.
And you do the same. And get to us, and we talk about it. You're part of the conversation. Join the conversation.
Get onto it.
This week, it's Master and Commander, Far Side of the World. Matt Amberg, do you have a synopsis?
I do. I've got one.
Okay.
I hope this works out, because I haven't read this over since I wrote it.
These are written? sorry.
For the most part... I take notes. It's all shorthand, but I don't know how to write shorthand, so it's confusing. Master and Commander, The Far Side of the Ocean, gonna come at you. 2 hours, 18 minutes. Written by Peter Ware and John Colley. Directed by Peter Ware. Starring Russell Crowe, Paul Bettany, James Darcy, and one of the Hobbits from the Hobbit movies, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship.
You know how much he probably hates that.
You know what? Suck it up, Buttercup. Here is your synopsis for Master and Commander, Hobbit Town. Wait, Master and Commander, The Far Side of the Ocean.
Okay, Far Side of the World.
Far Side of the World, right. What?
Nobody knows. It's okay.
It's The Far Side of the World.
Far Side of the Ocean.
Oh, boy. Thing. I've seen this movie. I promise I did. I watched it.
You didn't even get through the title, did you?
I missed everything.
It's pretty long. That's fine, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Master and Commander, The Far Side of
the time. Just what's the synopsis?
Far Side of the World is the synopsis is that's the name of the movie. Let's just okay.
It's true. The movie does synopsize itself in the title fairly well.
Yeah, and he says the title of the movie in the movie.
Oh, I don't know if I wrote that down. Okay, just all right.
Okay,
just keep that
here's
in mind.
Your synopsis for right. Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. When the French ship Acheron emerges from the ocean fog to attack a pursuing English warship under the command of Captain Jack Aubrey, he must choose between their duty to follow and destroy a bigger, faster, and better armed ship, or to head home.
All right.
That's pretty
good. Hey,
cool.
It's the 50th show, and this is a movie for the 50th show, chosen by friend of the show. Can I say that?
You can. You can.
At Jonathan Blade on Twitter. Thank you to everyone who suggested a show. They were all very good suggestions, actually. But we went with Master and Commander. I don't know if it's because he said the word Star Trek in his recommendation, which is kind of cheating if you think about it. But
I've never, yeah.
We chose it all the same.
We did.
And I'm glad we did.
Have you seen this before, by the way?
I had seen it before. Okay. Funny, and I think I mentioned this in my response. Funny, or no, I mentioned it in the short little show I did while we were taking a break. But I remember not being crazy about it. Like, I remember it being fine. Like, I don't remember hating it or anything. But I'm also not a huge Russell Crowe fan. Like, I don't like Gladiator all that much. And I like Ridley Scott.
You're like, I don't like him.
I'll say his name, Russell Crowe. I'm not afraid of him.
I'm not afraid of it. You might want to be. He might throw
you're right.
A telephone
actually, I
at
probably
you.
Should maintain a healthy amount of fear towards Russell Crowe.
Yeah, he'll hit you with a telephone.
What was the? This is neither here nor there, But the last thing I saw him in was like the video where he walks around his house talking about stuff that he's selling on eBay or something.
The last thing I saw him in was The Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling.
Okay. Oh, you're right. You're okay. I'm behind. That's probably better than the YouTube video.
Significantly so. It's one of my favorites. I love that movie a lot.
I also don't dislike him and everything. Like I liked he was in kind of a B thriller with Elizabeth Banks where she was jailed. I want to say it's 3 days, third day, something.
All right.
Whatever. It's good.
Fair enough.
Master and Commander, I was happy to go back to for that reason because I feel like, especially this thing where I think everybody else did like it for some reason or another, or it made it into the Oscar stuff for that year, I think I remember. I was happy to go back to it and be like, okay, what was either I missing or am I not remembering here? Stuff like that. So excited to do it.
All right.
Do you have any specific history with this thing?
Never saw it. It was
okay.
A...
Oh, okay. Wow. All right.
I never saw it. I never read the book that it's based off of. So I didn't know anything about it other than it was a period piece and that Russell Crowe uses a gun one time.
Okay.
Because that was on the cover of the movie or the poster or something.
It does sound familiar.
Yeah. I know. It was a movie that I honestly just... It never looked appealing to me. I am very indifferent to Russell Crowe. I like him just fine. Like, I love him in The Nice Guys. I think he and Ryan Gosling play together amazingly.
Indifference is a good word. I think that might be where I'm at too, actually.
I like Gladiator. I think Gladiator is a fun movie. But he is super hit or miss for me, and I don't know. I feel like he's got more misses than hits. But again, I'm just indifferent to him for the most part.
The thing I do, which you reminded me, that I do remember about Master and Commander that I think held true, and I think we can start here.
Okay.
Is that I remember it wholly creating a fantastic world about it. Like, I remember, despite any of my issues with the story or kind of disinterest, I think what you described actually mirrors my feelings as well. It's almost like a war movie in that regard. Like, period pieces kind of occupy the same space, and it's a fault of my own. It's a complete taste thing, right?
Sure.
I feel like I saw this thing and I was just predisposed to be like, okay, you know, really my thing, but let's check it out.
See, and I'm fine with period pieces. It was just something that, like, nothing about it looked interesting. And maybe it's because, like, I have no interest in, like, boat movies. Like, the Perfect Storm, never saw it, don't care, not interested. Titanic, holy crap, saw it once, regret everything about it. That is, I don't care who says it, yeah, effects wise, sure,
boat
all the work
movies
that went into it,
okay,
that is a bad movie.
Titanic,
but, like, yeah, it's not a good movie at all.
I'm disinterested in it pretty heartily, but I don't know if I'd say it was a bad movie.
I think
I can see why people like it.
I think that's a that movie is a terribly put together story.
Talk to your friend Billy Zane.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. No, so I do like period pieces, but again, yeah, this was something that just held nothing for me. It was an actor that I'm indifferent to on a ship doing at the time it was like, are they pirates? Are they, what are they? Okay, so they're Englishmen. Why do I care about this?
So what about the construction of it though? Like, did you get as lost as I did in that? Like, I'm not super familiar with Peter Weir's body of work, but I would say as far as directing goes, this is well done, but in the way that the camera kind of disappears. And I know a lot of that's going to have to do with the set, and a lot of it is practical. You know, the ships are real. You know, in fact, there were several points during this film where I thought, man, you know, if this movie got made today, and some boat movies do, I bet this would look a whole lot worse, just digitally speaking. Like, this thing would be
because they wouldn't let them use actual props.
So as far as that goes, I would say this thing deserves all the attention it got for that.
You know, I think I agree with you on everything, honestly. I think I do. I think the direction in the movie is nice. There were, you know, I totally did get goosebumps at one specific part where I went, oh man, this is like the way this is built is great. I absolutely adored the fact that everything looked practical and all that.
Looks good.
And it looks
really good.
It does look really, really good. And they have some of the choices, the long shot choices that they pulled out are just beautiful. Like, they found perfect places to set these boats out, like beautiful islands to set them near, whatever.
Yeah. In fact, they're not even done. I've vaguely remember some of this stuff on this, but also just looking at it, it's not even done on a soundstage. I don't know. Is that what you still call a soundstage full of water where you put a boat on it?
Sure.
Like they're out in the ocean somewhere.
Right.
And you don't see land in the horizon or anything. So they're out there somewhere and it's, it benefits for it. Definitely.
Yeah. Love that. I thought all that it's totally solid in those respects. So yeah,
okay.
I'm on board with you. I'm on board so far.
Okay. On all aboard, Matt Amberg, to my opinion. Story then. We do start out looking for that French ship. They are overpowered. They do get their butts kicked and disappear into the fog, which I don't know how much of the boating to not be okay with in this thing. Like that moment seemed a little bit like, really? He just went into the fog and he escaped. But then I'm like, oh, maybe you could actually do that back then. Or maybe they didn't follow because they didn't want to reengage in a possibly poor situation. I don't know.
I mean, so the Archon, which is the French ship.
Right.
They mentioned that it's much faster than theirs, too.
Definitely. Well, they do get their butts kicked. Like, they retreat.
Right. Like, so between the retreating and them being like, all right, well, we're already in the fog. So why don't we just stay in the fog? I mean, who knows how far they really went.
Okay. All right. Anyway, despite any credulity,
they
decide to refit at a nearby island rather than going home, which kind of everybody is surprised about. But because they do decide to go repair at the island instead of going back home, we get the first inklings of one of the main thrusts of the story, which is the character of the captain, Captain Jack. And maybe because it's a boat story, I don't know, he has to have some sort of white whale. And Captain Jack's here appears to be war or battle or, I mean, it's the Acheron maybe more directly, but it's not even a feeling of duty that I get, although I think that's what they're going for.
Well,
maybe
that's
he
specifically calls it out. He's asked about going back and he says, and abandon our duty? No.
Okay.
We're going to keep going. And I mean, and then it is called out later on that it is, this is far less about the duty and more pride.
And that's, I think, what becomes the main thrust, especially in a lot of ways. This movie is two dueling characters, that of Paul Bettany, who is his kind of his science officer.
He's his doctor. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He's also the doctor of the ship, but he's a niatch. Okay.
He is a naturalist.
Very different things.
Is he a naturalist or a naturalist? He's a naturalist.
Naturalist. Okay. Because he's, you know, working on the taxonomy of animals and all this stuff and trying to discover new species while they're out and stuff like that. So those two characters and points of view and philosophies are very much set up both in opposition, but also in co-mingling. I don't know.
Well, there is a healthy respect between the two of them.
There is, as friends, even though their philosophies are at odds. And basically, they go, they repair their ship, and they head back out to find the Acheron. And essentially, the plot is them searching after the Acheron, but they include all the downtime in between where they're feasting every night or drinking every night. And stop me if I'm moving too fast here.
No, this is okay. I will stop you because
thank you. Good God.
The movie, let's be real clear about this. The movie, in terms of how this story moves and what the plot is very clear. It's very delineated. It's very simple. It's really short to explain. It's because the movie is far more intimate than anything else. The 95% of the movie takes place on the ship. There's not a lot of space on the ship, so whenever you're seeing people, they're always surrounded by other people, with the exception of when they're in, you know, the captain's quarters. And it's a lot of those interactions and even some of the stuff in the background that kind of makes this movie, and is kind of what this movie holds on to, because he is the captain of the ship, and very much so the dynamic between him and his crewmen is in play here. And it becomes part of the back and forth with the doctor as well, because the doctor does know he's not in charge of the ship, but because their philosophies differ, you do get quite a few back and forths and moments, even in respite, where the two of them are by themselves and they're talking friendly, of him saying, you know, you really need to pull back on this. We're here as friends, and you know, but so
it is the movie. That is the movie. The
right.
Acheron is a MacGuffin, really, for all intents and purposes. If you think about it, the movie is made between those two characters, between their two philosophies. And it does take its time with it. I mean, this is a 2-hour-plus thing, right?
18 minutes. 2 hours okay. and 18 minutes.
2 hours and 18 minutes.
Pure crow.
I don't think I would cut anything.
No, and I think that's some of the something that kind of surprised me, because it seems like, and kind of, it doesn't do it justice, because this does sound reductive, but it's kind of a movie about the rote day-to-day of the crewmen. Like you're very much so focused on the relationship between the captain and the doctor, but those downtimes, so much of that, there is character building with the crewmen, but like, and it's just so seamless in how it, like how they bring characters in and how they move from scene to scene. Really well done in doing that. It's not like, for me anyways, it felt like there were enough moments where a character would come in and say, we need you up here. And then they would transfer all the shot there. But it was like, it felt more natural than the standard. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
For a movie that appears to be largely about the journey and about even the dalliances, you know, type thing.
But it doesn't feel forced either. Like it feels,
no.
It all feels like it needs to be there because it is
just hard to do.
Yeah.
For this type of thing. Yeah, no, agreed. I think where it does get the most interesting is where those philosophies do, and probably where it's most well done is where those philosophies do come head to head. Eventually, they do have a chance to stop by the Galapagos Islands, and Doctor's super excited because he's going to get to go out and discover all these new species. There's a species of flightless bird that he saw for 1 second that he really wants to figure out and take pictures of, and I guess take specimens of. But right as they're about to make land, they see the Acheron. Is it off in the distance or something?
They see a ship, but they're not okay. Sure which one it is.
Okay. In any event, Captain Jack easily is like, well, we're not going to the Galapagos then. And Doctor is heartbroken. And they have their first real discussion where I think their philosophies are really first put in opposition to each other. And I think the scene's done really well because, like, this is where we get the line from Russell Crowe that, quote unquote, man must be governed. And Paul Bettany, you get the feeling, kind of knows the score. And the movie by the end is very much a meeting of the two philosophies rather than a championing of one over the other.
Yeah. And I think that, I think Paul Bettany is tremendous in this movie. Fantastic.
He's good. Yeah. He's cool.
I think that he, you know, he to me is the, like, he is the MVP of this movie. He made this movie significantly better than it might have been.
Yeah, it's probably a deeper character too. Like, I don't know if
I think he is, because we get the relationship between him and the kid who loses his arm in the first battle. One of the deck hands gets hit by a cannonball, loses his arm, and is kind of taken under his the doctor's wing a bit, and finds out that he really enjoys a naturalist. He enjoys Paul Bettany is injured at one point, and they go to they pull into.
He is injured at one point. The moment I yelled at the movie the most, maybe.
Okay. No, okay,
maybe that's not
why
we're talking about. It's just the way he gets injured is so stupid.
So they're near shore, and he sees that they're pointing out this bird, and he's so interested in what the bird is, and one of the idiot like officers keeps trying to shoot the bird, and then ends up shooting Paul Bettany like in his side. And
who shoots a gun while you're moving it? I guess somebody trying to shoot a bird, sure.
But why are you swinging a gun around onto the ship? You clearly does not understand gun safety. But
no, does not.
He has that relationship with the kid, helping him kind of get comfortable with something different and understand the, you know, the naturalism and all that, and the world is bigger than he might expect.
Hearing you talk about it more and more, like, Paul Bettany is given way more to work with than Russell Crowe ever is.
Right, but if you kind of think about it, that reflects on who they are. Because as the doctor, he is far more like likely to have conversations with the crewmen. He's far more likely to be, he's easily like more available.
So he's like Spock, Nurse Chapel. I don't know why I'm going original series here, and Bones combined.
Yeah. Whereas Russell Crowe is just,
he is,
what's his name?
Mud.
Mud. No, yeah.
Kirk.
Yeah. What was Kirk's real name?
James T.
Bill Shatner.
Yes.
Bill Shatner. But he's just Russell Crowe is, this is, I've gone to, never mind.
Yes. Never
you know what? I'm done. Thing. I'm done. I tried. I failed. Look.
You know why I think we might run into issues talking about this thing, especially going
to. I'm pretty sure we already have.
Is for all of its beauty, for all of its masterful construction, I don't think the movie itself has a lot to say.
It's very shallow. Honestly. It's a very shallow. Everything is very surface level to it.
I mean, I enjoyed the dueling philosophies, definitely, and I think those were portrayed very well. Mm-hmm. I just don't think at the end, especially, I mean, like I mentioned, the movie, the solution is that basically he gets shot and then Russell Crowe has to decide, do I keep chasing the ship and let my friend die, or do we go somewhere and let the not doctor work on my friend? So he goes to the Galapagos where the doctor was crestfallen that they never got to go and brings him out. And then the not doctor is able to operate on him.
Well, I mean, technically he operates on himself.
That's true. He has the, yeah, that movie should have been about him. Movie was about him, actually.
It kind of was a little bit more.
But then while he's out looking for his flightless bird, he sees the Acheron rounding the Galapagos and he's like, dang it. So he goes back and he tells the captain, and the movie very much meets in the middle and it's like, okay, you know, it's very much like now the captain understands what's really important, but he has permission from the doctor to still go do the fun thing.
And I kind of admit this moment was both funny to me, but also like, it was a moment where I was just, I heavy sighed where Russell Crowe's Captain Jack finally comes to the conclusion that nature is not the worst thing in the world. Maybe he should pay closer attention to it, which by the way, I'm not against conservation, but if you don't think there's a little bit of a conservation message in this movie, I don't know. I think maybe you're missing something a little bit. I think there was.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like
the conservation would definitely be on the doctor's side. I don't know.
Well, of course, but in this moment, they hand Russell Crowe a stick, and he says, "A stick," and then they give him a
the quote I should have pulled from the movie.
A stick. Then they give him a magnifying glass and they tell him, oh, it's a stick bug. And he goes, oh, we should do this with our ship.
It's a phasmid, Matt. A thing that disguises itself.
Yeah, it's Captain Phasmid from Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And it's already lived longer than she did. So it's one of those moments where...
And it's foreshadowed. Like, they show the stick bug is like the first thing he's looking at in the book at the beginning of the movie or something like that. Or he's talking to the kid about it or something like that.
I don't know if that's an earned like revelation for him at that point.
It's just heavy handed. Like I said, everything in this movie is heavy handed to, surface level, like you said. Like, those ideas are fun and I like seeing them head to head and they're portrayed very well.
And here's where here's where I'm at with this movie. I could watch this movie again because it's not a dumb action movie, but it's along the same lines in terms of it goes, and it was really engrossing. It like, I wanted to know what was going on. I was into the movie. I was into the story. It's just, that's not a movie that I'm going to walk away from and go, man, that was deep. That was something I'm going to think about. Yeah, no, that's a movie I walk away from and go, there was some cool stuff in that, you know? And
it
like,
was like, and the ending is cool. You get a big boat battle that's really cool. Like,
and
my favorite part is when the doctor and the kid are just murdering. Like, everybody's just murdering. Like, there's no respect for life at all at that point in the movie.
There was a moment of goosebumps there when Russell Crowe's got his, he tells them, to raise colors or whatever, and they all take off their jackets and start rushing forwards. Like, that was so well done. And cool. Such a great, that because they have this great shot of,
yeah,
of not only, like, they do, and this was something that I really liked. They did this close up on Russell Crowe, and you see him, like, you see his shoulders, and he's taking his jacket, or he's taking the, like, the fake coat off to show.
I want
to
say it's from the trailer too.
Yeah. And then, but in the background, you see all of the other people, and there was just something really, like, exhilarating in that moment. And then the camera pulls back, and you see the British flag unfurl, and you see the reaction of the French. And it's just, this moment is so perfectly put together. And then, you know, and the fight scene with it is really fun. It has some issues. I have some issues with it because it does the Bourne supremacy thing, but with guns.
Was it a little shaky for you?
It wasn't the shaky so much as it's just a thousand cuts. Like,
you don't know where anybody's at. Yeah, that's actually true, because there are supposed to be several attacks going on. One of the guys is supposed to go down and rescue the hostages. The other guy's supposed to do something else. The other guy, and you're right, I had no idea where anybody was in their mission.
The only one that I could tell was Russell Crowe. I couldn't, and well, the doctor, but I could not. There was the Billy, I want to say Barty, again, but it's like, that's not right. The Hobbit guy. I thought he got shot at one point, and then he shows up at the end. He's totally fine. I was like, okay, well, who the hell did they shoot? And
there
then,
is another guy. He looked like another guy that I kept getting them confused.
And I was
time.
Like, why did they show that? Like, I don't remember that guy being important at all, but they were like super, we're going to show the kid underneath the boat, and then he's just going to gun somebody down. Like,
yeah, it's funny. The close quarters action is probably the weak point of the film. Like, the weak.
Yeah, the close quarters combat is the weak link in the film in terms of like action and how things are shot. It's not really well done. But the naval stuff is pretty well done, like the cannons, and you kind of do, like, there's some weight to the cannons. And actually what I did love too is that they didn't do the thing where a cannon is shot and now the whole ship is sinking. One cannon, that's it, that's all you needed.
They set that up too, saying that they didn't have the firepower to even pierce the Acheron's hull, so
right,
they had to aim for the mast, and
right, and
plenty to appreciate. And I think regardless of it maybe not having much to say in the end, it's a good movie. Like, it's better than I remember. It might even be a great movie, actually.
I could maybe see it there. I don't know. I liked it a great deal, that's for sure. I don't know if it's a great movie, but I liked it a great deal. I did. I will say this about it too. So my understanding is, I believe it was a trilogy of books. And so it was supposed to be a trilogy of movies, and that's why it ends on a cliffhanger-ish, where the cliffhanger is essentially they find out that when they finish taking over the French ship, they go down to the medical quarters or where they're doing surgery on somebody, and the doctor tells him, we tried to do everything we could for him, and it's clearly supposed to be, it's the captain, and he says, the captain told me to give you this sword when you came here. And they capture everybody, they keep them on the French ship. He passes over captainship to his first mate, or for his,
yep,
whatever.
I think so, yeah.
That guy takes over the other ship with a crew, and then they realize at the very end, Russell Crowe realizes that the doctor was the captain and that there's going to be a mutiny on that ship.
See,
and
I didn't even take that as a cliffhanger, actually. I thought it was one of those cool endings, like, the work is never done, or the show must go on type thing, you know, like, where, like, it's about the journey. Like, there is technically no end. It's just, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know, but it was supposed to be, there were supposed to be sequels, and the movie did not do well at the box office to warrant,
really,
sequels. Not enough to warrant a sequel. And
it's such a production, like, I'd be surprised if that was figured into it as well.
Probably.
And honestly, thinking about it, you saying you would watch it again, I don't know if I would watch this again, actually. I think I got everything out of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't go back to this to get more out of it. It'd be a go back to, it's like to a point, It's like Hunt for Red October. Hunt for Red October is way better right. movie.
I would go back to Hunt for Red October. But I yeah, need to I, go back to
I
Hunt
haven't
for
seen that in a long time, actually. Maybe we should do the Jack Ryan trilogy.
Ooh, oh, I did that at some point, didn't I?
You
I mean,
did,
we never did a show
but I don't think
on
you,
it.
But I don't think you watched Hunt for Red October. I think you did Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger.
No, I did, because we remember we talked about the moment where it goes
oh,
to...
Yeah, English, because...
Russian English.
Armageddon
yeah.
is the same word, the same in English and Russian or something like that. Anyways, no, I'd go back to this because it's a spectacle movie, you know, with really good costuming, and it's got some fun stuff to it. And, you know, this is a movie Beth would probably like. And yeah.
I'd still give it 73 stars.
Yeah. Out of, you know, 82.
Accurate, as always, here at Book Club for Movies. Now... You have to tell me what movie we're doing next week, because you have it figured out and are very excited about it, and I even might have told you not to tell me and spring it on me right now.
I am excited about this one. This is going to be a good one. It's called The End of the Tour. It stars Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg. It is a movie that is about a guy who wrote a book after he spent time talking to David Foster Wallace. And Jason Segel plays David Foster Wallace. And I really am super excited to watch this. It's going to be good.
James Ponsoldt, directed by... Okay. It's funny, hearing you talk about it, I got the feeling that you had remembered a fantastic movie that everybody would know, that I would certainly know, that we had somehow just not even talked about yet. But I've never heard of this in my life.
And this is... There's a couple reasons for it. Number one, David Foster Wallace is one of those writers who people really get passionate about, and in both directions, where they think he was kind of a jag-off, and others who were, no, he's brilliant. And he was brilliant. I mean, he was a brilliant man, whether or not he was, you know... But
mutually exclusive.
No. The thrust here that I'm trying to get to, though, is when asked what his favorite movie Jason Segel had ever done, when he was asked, you know, what did you love doing? You know, and he was like, you know, I'll be honest with you, this movie, The End of the Tour, I really wish more people had seen it, because I think it's my best work.
Well, minimum two more people are going to see it by next week.
And it is going to be a fun movie to have a chat about, I think.
All right. Okay. Excellent. Yeah.
The End of the Tour, which, by the way, streaming on Netflix.
Oh, that's good to let people know about that.
Indeed.
I forget.
I do too. But this one's streaming on Netflix. So
okay.
Get after it.
Is it streaming on Netflix?
It is streaming on Netflix. I checked that out earlier.
Okay. As long as it's streaming on Netflix.
It is there on Netflix.
We are so not sponsored by Netflix, but at this point I'm starting to doubt people are going to believe us.
Starting to think we
Although,
should
Although, heck, can we be sponsored by Netflix?
I don't know. Let's call them.
Okay. How about for now we do the rest of the show? Have you seen anything else over the past, how long have we been gone? 7 weeks?
Yeah.
You want to talk about?
Not really. I did watch...
Really?
I did watch Tapeheads, and I didn't pull all the information for it with John Cusack and Tim Robbins. That movie is still really funny. There's not a whole lot to it. It's a very, very funny movie. I believe that was a Rayzilla suggestion.
Yeah.
And then the other one, I've got it queued up. I haven't watched it yet, but I have it queued up. I just haven't seen it in forever. It's The Seventh Seal.
Oh, and the other suggestion, yeah.
Max von Sydow.
There's no reason why we couldn't still do that one.
No, we still
Except
definitely could.
Except for that we're doing The End of the Tour next week, I guess.
You know, we could plan it out and do it the week after.
If we did The Seventh Seal, I would also watch Bogus Journey.
Oh, sure. Why not?
That would be my double feature.
I can
do
that. And also, Bogus Journey is streaming, I think, on Amazon.
Oh, is it on Netflix?
It is not on Netflix. I think it's on Amazon, and I think it's actually also on Hulu.
Also, buy it. It's Bogus Journey.
From Netflix.
From Netflix.
What is it? You might be a king or a little street sweeper, but sooner or later you dance with the Reaper. And then he swings the scythe around and ducks underneath it.
Are we talking about Netflix though?
That's Bogus Journey.
Bogus Journey.
Station.
Really? That's it? So you've watched a ton of movies for sure, because that's just what we do. But nothing you really feel like talking about more than that.
Not really. I will say this: this is not a movie thing. We generally talk about movies, but and I haven't talked about this much here.
Hey, it's the 50th show. Anything goes.
I got I have a love-hate relationship with The Walking Dead for like from seasons like 5.10 to like all the way through season 7 or season 8.
That's funny because my problems began in season two, I want to say.
Not a huge fan. Oh, man. See, I get into that with people. I've had that conversation where I love season two. Nobody else seems to love it, but I love that season. I realize people think it's slow and plodding.
It would be interesting to go back and see at this point. Okay.
I want to. I'm actually considering it.
Oh, no. That would be a separate podcast.
I am considering going back and starting The Walking Dead from beginning to what's on Netflix.
End of Rick. No, oh, is it on Netflix? Gosh dang.
Yes, Walking Dead has been on Netflix for a while.
Okay. All right.
But I want to, like, there are aspects to the seasons I like and all that, but it's just, they were so uneven.
We could do a show because I feel like some of my favorite seasons are some of your least favorite seasons too.
Yeah, we could definitely, if you want to do a Walking Dead episode, we could do a zombie episode.
Except then I would have to probably remember or watch seasons again.
See, we got to go back through it. That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah. But this new season, man, kill Rick and everything is better. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, so is he out now? I know he's going to be out.
He's gone. He's not going to be in the show again, but he's, you know, it's...
Wait, so is he in the show right now, this season that you are enjoying?
He's in it for the first, like, six episodes.
Okay.
And then his exit happens, but it's, again, it was one of those things that's telegraphed from the minute AMC or any company is like, it's his last show. You know that it's not. So it was... It was a smart choice in terms of how they did that because it allowed them to get into the next arc of the comics, which is the Whisperers. And to do that, they had to do a time jump. So it was a really good time and good way of them doing it so that they could kind of exit Rick. They're already moved forward. Everything is smart, there.
The Parks and Rec technique.
That's right. That's right. Mark, more like Mark Brandana quits, right?
Who's that?
Yeah. Mark, you don't remember Mark Brandanowitz from Parks and Rec?
Mm.
He was in like the first three seasons, maybe. He was the guy that Leslie was in love with in the first season, and she was still really into him in the second season, and then he starts dating Anne.
Do you want to do the Parks and Rec podcast before the Walking Dead podcast?
No. Okay. I mean, I could do that one right now. Like the Parks and Rec one, I've got that on lock.
I do not have anything on lock.
But they not only did they introduce the Whispers in a really, really good way, this season just in general, all of it's been written way better. And one of the major problems that season 7 and 8 have that are one of the reasons why it's just so awful is that the arc that they were covering was like 6 issues long. They extended that by 2 seasons when it should have been...
Never works out.
Should have been 1 season at...
Wait, is it the Negan stuff too that they extended?
Yes,
come on. So, I barely was into that to begin with.
And it's they added so much to it that was... And they had to try and remix things. And they just made it go forever when it could have been much quicker. They could have gone at a better clip. And they just didn't. And
that's a discussion I can have because I think that's where I'm at. I finished the first season of Negan and liked it fine. I think I liked that season where you did not. But I don't know what they did. I don't have the whole second half where they extend it for another season. So I guess I got that to look forward to.
No, and you know, you might enjoy it because you have consistently enjoyed the show more than I have. There are bits with Negan that I do really enjoy in that season. And a lot of it is the stuff that's lifted straight from the comics. I've mentioned this before. I'll mention it again. I cannot tell you how many times at this point I have gone back to the first episode of that season to watch Abraham and Glenn get their heads beaten in because a great, amazing, like the effects and the way they did it are fantastic. I really enjoy the
therapeutic aspect to this.
I just really enjoy how that all came together. And that was that, okay, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is going to kill this role. And then I think that it had a lot of ups and a lot of downs and a lot of, you know, they were kind of like 90 degrees leaning a little bit, but
oh, imagine that.
But in any case,
Negan joke.
But this season, man, they're like, even the first 6 episodes really solid. It was, and now like the other night, I don't remember if it was this past weekend or the weekend before, one of the freaking, and it's something that I was looking forward to seeing how they were going to work it out. And man, did they figure out how to do some of the Whisperer stuff. And one of the Whisperers in particular in the comics is a really interesting character because he's like, it's a very, they got a kind of a blank slate with this character, but
there are some
things that are going to happen if they kind of followed through, and I'm crossing fingers because this is a point where Negan has some really, really good stuff, some really funny stuff.
We almost started getting back into Walking Dead because we just finished. We're at the tail end. You know what? This actually dovetails, and this is going to be, I'll end the show with this. I've got some movies. Actually, I saw Captain Marvel. That's probably the main thing people would want to hear about or talk about.
I know all the spoilers. I got it.
Not that I would spoil it anyways, but it's good. It's obviously not as bad as any of the loud dorks on the internet are saying. What was most interesting for me is that it was kind of the first time I went to see a movie for the same reason I watch a TV show. Like, I wasn't expecting this to be amazing, even though I liked the trailers. I liked what I saw of it.
Sure.
But it was the first time I remember going to a movie to get updated on the universe, to be like, oh, I like being in this universe. I like knowing what's going on. Captain Marvel transcends that kind of stuff, but is still fun and super cool, and it's worth seeing for sure. Even in the theater, I would say, whatever.
Yeah, honestly, it was more than anything, that's just a character that I don't have any history with. And
sure,
I have said this already. My concern with that character is that she's going to come in and be a Deus Ex Machina, and that's going to be the end of that's the end of everything, which she probably will be because this part offline, the fact that she's a freaking Infinity Stone, basically, come on, seriously.
Oh, I didn't see any of that. Wait.
How, you saw the movie. She was made from an Infinity Stone. Like, that's how she has all of her powers and everything.
That's right. She's made by like an energy explosion of the Tesseract, right?
Right, and the Tesseract was the first Infinity Stone that we
were ever. I don't know if I consider her an Infinity Stone. Like, I will say that they definitely build her up to be the most powerful character in the universe right now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that's rad to watch. I get the feeling Avengers Endgame is going to be an entire Deus Ex Machina, you know, like,
well, I mean, you know,
whether
again,
or not it all spins on a dime. Yeah, you're right. If hopefully Captain Marvel shows up early on in the movie and not later on.
Well, we know she does based on the, if you haven't seen the last,
we don't know where that stinger takes place do they typically take place chronologically? Like, if I see them meeting in the stinger, does that mean they're already going to have met in Endgame?
No. Well, yeah. Yeah. Cause that means she should be there already. And then we also see, that she, in the last trailer, that she meets Thor for the first time, and they're clearly in their, at the Avengers University or whatever. Right. And it seems like I can't imagine she's going to come in towards the end of the movie. I think for a lot of reasons, they have to bring her in. And on top of that, no,
they should.
She's absolutely at the beginning of the movie because we already know that Fury turned the thing on. And in the trailer, we saw that they found the thing, the transponder. They kept it going, and then she shows up. It has to be super early in the movie. Has to be.
Yeah, no, I hope so. I guess I'm not attributing, whatever. In any event, Captain Marvel's fun. Like, Brie Larson does a really good job. I do have some issues with her relationship with Nick Fury. I don't think it lands 100%, and the movie hangs a lot on it, so I think it becomes problematic there. But everything else, totally cool. Like, that character is fleshed out once she gets more people around her in a really cool way, even if I think she made some questionable choices along the way. Definitely worth seeing. That's all I'll say. Honestly, that was just a quick get that out of the way. All this TV talk has me wondering if we do the show, and I pitched this to you a while ago. I don't know if you liked it or remember it, but the title's bad, so the rest could be good. It's called TV Volleyball, Matt.
Okay.
And abbreviated TVVB.
I remember this vaguely.
Do you remember? Okay. And it's basically just us throwing shows back and forth together. Because we talk about movies, yeah, but we're all both, I would say, simultaneously watching like five TV shows.
Seriously, right now. I am right now. Here, I'm just going to give you my quick list.
No, don't do it yet. That's the episode. Like you throw one at me and then I throw one at you back. And then we just go back and forth. Like it's nothing we've seen together, I guess, with many times it is stuff we've seen together, but you could throw Walking Dead in there. Like you've also started watching a show that I have been watching that I'm at the tail end of, I think. So
which one?
Do you want me to spoiler?
This
spoiler
one
for TVVB, everybody.
On this one, yeah.
News Radio?
Oh, I haven't even started it.
Haven't started yet? Okay. No. I thought you were close.
I thought it was somewhere. I thought it was something else because I got it. Yeah. No,
see,
let's do it.
And see how much is pent up? Like, there's a show on us just waiting to get out.
And I got one show that I really would love to talk about because I got a lot of things.
I mean, okay. Do you want to do TV volleyball after end of the tour?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. 52nd episode spectacular. This was number 50. Come back for 51, wherein we do the end of the tour. Is that the correct title?
That is correct.
I've never seen it. Matt has seen it and loves it, and it's the best. After that, we'll do some TVVB, copyright, patent pending.
That's why you said it out loud.
That's, again, emailing it to myself. Did I do that on this show or the show before this?
Either way, it just consistency is key here. Just keep emailing yourself with patents.
Tuesdays for 0 hit points, Thursdays for book club, for movies. Thank you, everybody.
Bye! Thank you.